The following lecture is under copyright by Reformation Christian Ministries and is for your personal use only. It is not to be copied or otherwise distributed, sold, or used commercially without the specific written permission of Reformation Christian Ministries. Contact information will be provided at the end of this lecture.
Okay, we talked about the innate religiosity of man, or we're talking about that, and that innate religiosity of man is found in Romans 1. 18 and 19, you know, where it says the wrath of God is revealed against all ungodliness of men who know the truth about God, even his eternal power and Godhead. And so it's very clear that God has built into us that religious nature that we cannot escape. In fact, when we try to escape it, as he says, therefore we are without excuse in the next couple of verses there. And so it's very, very clear that God has designed man with that innate religious nature, and that he cannot escape that, and that when he seeks to do that, he simply becomes guilty before God. And so we want to be very careful about that, because the unrighteous man holds the truth in unrighteousness. Now, there's several translations of that, by the way, and I think we need to understand that that katekonton, the later translations indicate suppress the truth in unrighteousness, but I really think it's better to translate it the way the King James does. He holds the truth in unrighteousness. He holds the truth, but he holds it in unrighteousness. You see what I'm saying? In other words, he can't escape it. If he suppresses the truth, it's as though he's somewhat successful in his own mind in escaping it. You know the Greek word echo, huh? I have, huh? Well, it's katekonton, to have against or to hold against the truth in unrighteousness. But he does suppress the truth. Part of his reaction to the truth is suppressing it. But I think that he knows the truth. He can't escape the truth, and that's the point that Paul is making. So that which may be known of God is clear unto him. For God has shown it to him. God has revealed it to him. Isn't that interesting? That's what it says. And he is without excuse because he was not thankful. He didn't glorify God, neither was he thankful. And therefore God gave him up to a foolish mind and so on. And so we have to understand something here. That God curses sin with more sin. And that's particularly true with respect to this built-in religious nature of man. And that is that when man holds that in unrighteousness, God turns him over to a reprobate mind. See? Why has the United States sunk into such a moral morass? Carrying out Romans 1. When we and our leaders and our churches have thrown the God of the Bible out, you know, as we observed the other day to our friend from the... Did you see the Yankton paper from yesterday? You are quoted in the front page article. I thought it was going to be the write-up on the seminary, but it happened to be the write-up on this 911 thing. And then there's a couple other ministers, a lady leader at the Roman Catholic outfit over in Yankton, and you and I are the guys that are quoted mostly in this thing. But it talks about, you know, some of the stuff we said about 911. He said, aren't all religions the same? And we said, no, they're not. There's one, I look back now and I said, we should have been more clear. There's one God-given religion. And not only are religions different, but there's one religion that comes directly from God. It's not a man-made religion. All other religions are man-made. But that's what God does. He curses sin with more sin, and that more sin is interesting because it takes that which is good, good religion, namely, and then it invents a caricature. You know what a caricature is? A cartoon image, a distorted image. Man-made religion is always a distorted image of the true religion. You know, people wonder, how come there's flood stories in some of the pagan religions of the Near East? Well, obviously, that's a great story, and whatever religion people made up in their own mind, they kept the flood story. Now, it was a caricature. It wasn't the true one that got preserved through Moses and Noah. Of course, Noah was there. He knew the flood story better than anybody. And then that was handed down through Shem and his family, the elect line, down to Abraham and finally to Moses. And so they had an accurate flood story in among the people of God. And then, of course, God superintended Moses' writing so that Moses wouldn't goof it up. And Moses gave us the inspired story of the flood. But the point is, there's not a problem that there's the Gilgamesh epic, which has a flood story in it, and then there's another two or three Far East religions that have a flood story in them, because they held on to some of the traditions, just like liberalism holds on to some of the traditions of Christianity, but has so distorted them that it's not Christianity anymore, you see? And so what we mean here is a distorted religion. And that's what Romans 1 says, that God gave them up to a reprobate mind. God, their foolish hearts were darkened. Who darkened those foolish hearts? God did. And thinking themselves wise, they became fools, and they made images like man and four-footed beasts and creeping things and birds, and worked those things, and ended up, and this is always true, of every man-made religion, and that's how you can really pick them out. Romans 1:25. They worshiped and served the creature. Well, what does Romans 1 say? God gave them up to a reprobate mind so that they would defile their own bodies through themselves. He uses homosexuality as well as idolatry as the two sins that God curses man with when he turns away from God. Because they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, he gave them up to do unseemly things for themselves. Men lusted after men, women after women, against nature. Huh? See that? Now, what's homosexuality got to do with Methodism? Everything. Because the Methodists have become liberals. They rejected the God of the Bible. I'm picking on the Methodists. You know, the Reformed did the same thing. A lot of the Reformed did the same thing. But it's got everything to do with rejecting the God of the Bible. Because when you do that, God gives you over to a reprobate mind. And what is a reprobate mind? A debased mind. A perverted mind. What is homosexuality? A debased, perverted use of sex, you see. What is a religion? And see, Romans 1:25. Let's take a religion like Roman Catholicism. It has made Christianity a religion in which man serves God. God serves man. Man doesn't serve God. See that? Their whole interest in the Roman Catholic Church is man-centered religion. There's very little worship of the true God goes on in the Roman Catholic service. Now, what goes on is the tradition that they do read some Bible verses, huh? And in those verses, God is glorified. But they miss most of the whole thing. And you never hear a Roman Catholic write or sermon on glorifying God. You would never hear anyone except a real hard rock Calvinist and biblical Calvinist today saying that the destruction of the two trade towers in New York was for the glory of God. But it was. God showed how great he is at that point in quite a number of ways. In, let's say, the heroism of some people, the utter despair of some people who jumped off the buildings, huh? What is that? That's committing suicide. That wasn't escaping, in a sense, but that was committing suicide on the part of most of those people. Now, if a guy jumped off with a rope and got to the end of the rope, he wasn't at the bottom yet. He made a mistake, an honest mistake. But you see, what I'm saying is that when man does what Paul says there in Romans 1, when he rejects the truth about God, when he rejects that inward religious nature, when that's controlled by sin, then God delivers him up to more sin. And that sin is idolatry and homosexuality. Those are the two sins that he's talking about. But I don't care what other sins you want to talk about. Very often, they are the result of rejecting the one true God. And what happens, of course, is that when man's conscience is released from the responsibility of the one true God, what do you have? You know, you have the triumph of sin in those people's lives. Huh? See that? So what happens when a kid who grew up in the Reformed Church in Mitchell comes to the University of South Dakota and never goes to church? His mind is released to involve himself in the sins of the university community. Huh? See that? Now that doesn't happen by chance. That doesn't happen by chance. When we reject God, he rejects us. And part of that rejection is to allow us to wallow in sin. And as I said, he says that when they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, he turned them over to a reprobate mind, to dishonor themselves, to do the most filthy thing that men do, which is homosexuality. One of them, anyway. Okay. Pretty interesting, isn't it? So God, I think it's an accurate thing to say, God curses sin with more sin. Take it this way. Let's say you and I are little kids, and we do a little shoplifting. We steal something. What do you know about the second time you steal? It's easier.
Conscience is
hardened. Sure, conscience is hardened. What do you know about the second time you commit adultery? It's easier. See that? I don't care what sin you're committing. And so it is. Why? Because when I steal, I'm violating God's commandment. I'm rebelling against God. I'm not just ripping off the five and dime, huh? But I'm stealing from God. It's God's stuff anyway. And so that hardens my conscience. And people who reject God in their hearts, in their religion, whose religion is anti-God, that religion then hardens their hearts. Take these guys like Jim Jones and even what's his name? Some of these fundamentalist TV preachers who were found running around with prostitutes and stuff like that. How can that happen? How can guys like Jim Jones exist? Well, having rejected God, they developed a man-centered religion, and guess who the man was? Me. See that? Now, that's a part of all of us. We've got to be very, very careful with that. The sinfulness that's in us is always self-centered. The sinfulness that's in us is always self-centered. And so often, you know, and I have to say to you, one of the things that I've become sensitive to is my own self-centeredness. And it's embarrassing to me before God that so often self-centered thoughts come into my mind. What's going to happen to me? What's my future going to be? What's my health going to be like now as I start deteriorating more and more as an old codger? Huh? Doesn't matter. I'm here to serve God. I'm here to glorify God. But anyway, so often when you talk to somebody, and you soon get the impression that this person is very self-centered, you will also find that there are almost always some pretty severe sins in their lives. It's a very, very interesting thing. Along with that always goes self-righteousness. Because part of the religious nature of man, Romans 2, 14 and 15, is a moral sensibility. Huh? See that? And if you are, if the image of God in your heart, the sensus deitatis, is also controlled by sin, dealt with, and I shouldn't say rebelled against by sin, but yet you can't obliterate that moral sensibility. Murderers don't like to be murdered. Thieves don't like to be stolen from. Liars don't like to be lied to. See that? That innate, and so it's very interesting that some of the most self-righteous people on earth are sitting on death row. Very, very interesting thing. And for whatever reason, you know, people will say, well, I was right and you were wrong. I was telling the truth. The whole world was wrong. That's why the secular psychologists come up with this idea of mental illness, because some people are so distorted in their thinking that no matter what happens, I was right. And anybody who's right all the time is very suspect in my eyes. And I just know better. I know that even as right as I am. I'm wrong all the time. See that? And so the idea that someone can be that right is to me a kind of a red flag. You know, when somebody comes to me with a disagreement and an altercation or something like that, and it's all the other guy's fault. Had a guy up in Artist years ago. We excommunicated this guy, as a matter of fact. And I would go and I'd have 2-hour visits with him. And in 2 hours, I'd hardly get a word in edgewise. And he'd tell me all these stories about everybody in the community, how wrong they were and how right he was. He was always right and everybody in the county was wrong. His world was the county up there. He was a farmer. And I said, you know, nobody's as right as you are. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, every story you tell me, it's about how you are the hero, you are the right guy, and everybody from your wife to your kids and to your neighbors to the church is wrong. I said, we are all sinners, but guess what? So are you. Well, he got mad. Well, anyway. So I think we have to understand that sin is a kind of self-multiplying process in which God is involved. You know, he gave them over to a reprobate mind. Okay. Well, as I said, part of this religious nature of man is this moral nature of man. We are made in the image of God, and that's moral agency and moral righteousness, as you'll find out in a couple of semesters in theology. And so man is a moral creature. Just as God has made man in his image, then man is an inescapably religious creature. Man is an inescapably moral creature. He cannot deny morality. As I said, thieves don't like to be stolen from. Liars don't like to be lied to. Now what's very interesting about that is that that makes man inexcusable. Romans 2, 14 and 15 say that man has a knowledge of the moral law, that there's not a human being. When the pagans do by nature the things contained in the law, these are a law to themselves, showing that the righteousness of the law written on their hearts. And so it's very, very clear that they are inescapably moral creatures. Written in their hearts is what it says. We see the works of the law written in their hearts. Therefore, they witness, you see, with their conscience bears witness. Now, notice what their conscience does, either accusing or excusing them. Aha! In the Christian, the conscience accuses you of sin. In the unbeliever, the conscience rationalizes sin. That's why, whence knowest thou thy misery? Out of the law of God. Without the law of God, without the written law of God, the conscience will excuse my sin. See that? And a lot of people use their consciences exactly that way, to excuse their sin. Now that's illegitimate, of course, but it happens to be the truth. And so the unbeliever shows, and that it means that he's an inescapably moral creature, and therefore, what is morality? It is responsibility. Two, external righteousness. I use R-I-G-H-T period as righteousness. It's responsibility to external righteousness. Therefore, it's responsibility to God. You will someday hear of William Glasser. William Glasser was a pagan psychiatrist who decided that Freud was all wet. And he wrote a book called Responsibility Therapy. And a lot of what Jay Adams wrote comes from some of William Glasser. Well, when I was president of the South Dakota Mental Health Association back in the early 70s, we invited William Glasser to come to Vermilion right here in town, and we had the Pastoral Counseling Institute. And he was very famous as an anti-Freudian psychiatrist, and we had 1,200 ministers show up at that conference from North and South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, and so on. About 15 of them walked out after the first lecture because he said, whoever made us responsible. And then all week, see, I had the credit card for the outfit because I was the president. I took this guy out to lunch every day, huh? And so he and I, the first day already, we got into a discussion, somewhat of an argument, about who are you responsible to? He said, you're responsible to yourself. I said, what if my thing is robbing banks? So that's silly. I said, he said, that's wrong. I said, now you're playing God. See? I said, you're responsible to God. And really, all you have to do with your system of psychiatry is recognize that responsibility is always to an external righteousness. Not an internal righteousness, because of course what? The heart of man is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked, huh? Yeah. He talked about how the psychiatric system fails by giving drugs to people. The milkman was sleeping with a few ladies on his route, and so that was found out, and so they decided he was mentally ill, and not just sinful, of course, but mentally ill. And so they gave him some pills that would lower his sex drive. Well, he threw the pills away. But what we have to understand is that that external righteousness, of course, is God. Huh? See, that external righteousness is God. So the moral nature of man makes him responsible to God for how he lives and for what he does. And part of that moral responsibility is to recognize and to acknowledge God. What does Romans 1:21 say? That when they knew God, they did not, or was that Romans 1:20? But anyway, when they knew God, they did not acknowledge him as God, neither were they thankful. They didn't glorify him as God, nor were they thankful, you see. And so man's responsibility to external righteousness, which is declared by his very moral responsibility, makes him responsible to worship God, to acknowledge God, to glorify God, and to be thankful to God, and rather than to be self-centered, living in his own world. Well, we're going to have to quit for today, even though we're having fun.
This lecture is copyrighted by Reformation Christian Ministries, the parent organization of Reformation International Theological Seminary and Reformation International College. This audio lecture is protected under international copyright law and is not to be copied, distributed, sold, or used commercially without the specific written permission of Reformation Christian Ministries. You may contact Reformation Christian Ministries through our website at www.reformation.edu. Reformation is spelled R-E-F-O-R-M-A-T-I-O-N. By email, you can also contact us at president@reformation.edu. By phone in the U.S., you can reach us at 772-571-8833 or by writing to Reformation Christian Ministries, 13950 122 Street, Fellsmere, Florida, 32948 in the USA.